good people who have traveled from villages near and far. Lend me your ears.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home?
What's up, Miss Tasty?
What's up, what's up?
Hi there, nice to see you. Bumblebee Tuna? Bumblebee Tuna!
Hello, West Mantooth. Hello, Evening News Team.
You are now listening to another edition of Movie Review Crew.
Welcome to the Goody Room.
But their ability to open is f***ing heroic.
And now, with your permission, I'm going to do my stuff.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to do the best I can.
All right, welcome in, everybody. This is another edition of the Movie Review Crew. I'm your host, Mike Lucas, and joining me is Shane Kronikin.
How's it going?
Steve Rushlaw.
How you doing?
And Aaron Kronikin.
Hello.
We have an excellent episode for you guys today. We are continuing our trek through the streaming services, and we are doing Outpost today. Not the 2000 and...
Not the horror action World War II zombie movie, unfortunately.
Right, right. As good as that one is, which it is good.
It's not bad. I would say it's more of a gem level good. It's like low budget, shitty, but good.
It's like one of those when you can't sleep and you're up at midnight watching the sci-fi channel and it comes on. You're like, I'm not mad that I sat there and watched that.
Very true. I do remember one specific scene in that movie where someone gets their brains blown out and there's just like slime sliding down a wall in the background.
That's how you kill zombies.
Obviously. Who's in that one?
Ray Stevenson.
That's right. Ray Stevenson.
The guy that at one point played the Punisher.
Also the creepy guy that's the creepy guy and everything and played the Night King in Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He was in Doom and played a creepy guy.
Ray Fiennes.
Yep. Very few people know that Voldemort was the Night King. That's a fun little fact.
They do kind of look like each other, do they not?
No, they don't. Not even. No.
I mean, they're dressing black. Just saying.
Richard Brake.
Huh?
Sure, Richard Brake.
I don't know.
This guy. Yep.
That's the creep. Look at that. Look how creepy he is. You guys can't see, but look him up.
Yeah.
We're looking at him. You guys all look him up and tell me he's not the creepiest person you've ever seen.
Look how creepy he is, he says on a podcast.
But they just feel how creepy I'm seeing he is.
His name is Richard Brake, B-R-A-K-E. That's Dick Brake. Look him up.
That's a good name. You won't forget that name. No, I shouldn't have forgot that name.
Just please.
Yeah, go ahead. All of our listeners, Google Dick Brake. See what pops up.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Please do not Google Dick Brake. I can only imagine what would happen. No, today we are doing Outpost from 2020. It's a Scott Eastwood and Landry Jones film.
Caleb Landry Jones, not the former Oklahoma quarterback Landry Jones.
It could be.
I mean, hey, he's probably got star power in some circles. He probably has star power. No. We're doing 2020 Outpost on today's episode. But before we get into that, I'm going to plug our website. Go to moviereviewcrew.com. You can request movies right on our homepage. And also, have you guys seen anything new lately?
I watched. I'll plug one of our writers for our show, Matt McNeil, posted an article about After Midnight. So if you go to our website, moviereviewcrew.com.
Why did he post it so late at night?
Oh, my God.
he posted an article
about a movie titled After Midnight.
Oh.
Right.
So I watched it. He said it's one I might like. It was very Babadook-esque, he said. It's kind of definitely a lower budget type of movie with actors and directors and people that you just wouldn't recognize. And it's pretty good. It's pretty good. You can tell it's low budget, but it's well written and acted because it's one of these type of horror movies that focuses more on the people And the horror is more of a representation of what these people are going through, kind of like with the Babadook. So it relies on actors actually being able to make you believe that they're real people in real situations. And I think they did a really good job. It felt like it's more of a romantic drama with horror elements, and they pulled it off pretty well. And it's only 84 minutes, so it does not overstay its welcome. The horror aspects are kind of a creature feature type of thing, like sci-fi monster type of thing. And the monster doesn't look great. You can tell it's a dude in a costume, but they use it effectively where it's, you know, you get flashes of it and you hardly see it. And so I thought it was really good. It's worth, I mean, okay, if you have Amazon Prime, it's free to stream and it's 84 minutes. So I think it's worth a watch. And if you don't like it, you didn't waste 2 hours of your life. So
right.
I recommend it though.
You wasted 84 minutes of it.
Instead. 84 minutes. If you don't stick around for credits, it's less than that.
I mean, that's a pretty quick movie.
That's very quick.
Less than an hour and a half is pretty unusual for a movie.
Fair enough.
But I think good on them though, realizing that it's a lower budget horror movie. Don't try to stretch it into something it's not. It's an 84 minute movie and that's what it needed to be. So
fair enough. You seen anything else?
No. There's one I mentioned to you guys before, though, that I will be seeing called Waiting for the Barbarians came out. Shane mentioned it. It's got Mark Rylance, who won an Oscar. Did he win for Bridge of Spies?
Yeah,
he did win it.
I know he was nominated, but anyway, he's in it. Johnny Depp is in it, and Robert Pattinson's in it. It looks interesting. I'm a little worried, though, because a lot of the reviews are saying that it's a display of two very different acting styles, where Mark Rylance is this kind of subdued, even keel type of acting, low key, kind of like he was in Bridge of Spies. And then a lot of them are saying, well, it seems like Johnny Depp forgot he's not in a Tim Burton movie because, you know, he's doing his Johnny Depp thing. And
it looks that way from the trailer. It definitely did. He had those weird glasses on and he had this. The accent can only be described as a Johnny Depp accent where it's just really, I guess it's really showy. I don't know. Plus that movie just looks boring as hell. So I'm sure you'll love it.
Yeah, we'll see. It has not good scores on anything. So.
And why?
I like Mark Rylance. I like Robert Pattinson and we'll just see what it is.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. Steve, what about you?
So one of the movies I watched, I haven't been on in 2 weeks, so I have a couple.
Yeah.
I watched action movie, The Old Guard. It's on Netflix. Check it out. It's free. Charlize Theron is on that or in it. She's fantastic in it. There's a scene where they're in a church. I think it's a church. And she's pretty much by herself and just goes ham on like 30 dudes, just killing them all.
Is this are you sure it's a church or is this like a gymnasium?
It's like a castle, old looking churchy thing.
Okay.
But no, not a gym, not close.
Not a gym in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Nope. Thing.
Okay. Remember that? Do you remember that?
No.
We remember that you mistook a school gym.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, that's what it was. You knew it was a gym. You just said it was a sports movie because it was a gym when it was a hospital.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gosh.
I don't.
Yeah.
But so, anyway, back to Steve's movie, The Old Guard. That's one I want to keep. I keep wanting to watch, but it's runtime. That's why I watched after midnight. It's 84 minutes. The Old Guard is over 2 hours, isn't it?
Lightly. I think it is, but.
Which is normal nowadays.
It's a quick movie. The guys that are in that, I've never heard of them. The three guys that are in it with her are pretty unknown.
It's 2 hours, 5 minutes.
At least for me, but I think the movie with Charlize Theron in it is at least watchable. And then that's pretty much the reason I watched this, because I wanted to get an action movie that was newer, similar to The Old Guard. But then I started watching The Conjuring universe chronological order. And the way they have it in chronological order is the Nun movie from, I think, 2017 or 2019. I'm not sure. But The Nun, it has to be one of the worst horror movies I've ever seen. It's pretty bad. I mean, there's jump scares left and right. The acting is terrible. So, starting off on the wrong foot. And then the second one in the order is Annabelle Creation. Obviously, people, if you know the Conjuring series, yeah. Annabelle's a little doll. That movie actually was a lot better than The Nun. And but then again, it's no Conjuring. So it kind of sits in the middle between those. So if you're looking for a horror movie, Annabelle Creation might be one to watch. And I don't think it's that long of a movie either. I don't remember how long it was.
Can't be that long. A spinoff of a spinoff or a sequel.
According
of a
to this, it's hour 49.
Yeah.
So hour 40.
But it's also like the third Annabelle that's been, or second Annabelle that's been made. So it's kind of a sequel, but it's a prequel. So yeah, that's what I've watched this past couple weeks.
All right, Shane.
I only watched one other thing. I watched David Ayer's new movie, Tax Collectors.
Didn't we talk about him last episode?
Yeah, I don't know. He seems to be, he's one of those guys where it's like, he's made a few decent movies, but goodness, he's awful.
He just can't get out of his own way. He has his own style, and he's just, I mean, kudos to him. He's become big enough to make movies in his vision and in his own style, and he's unapologetic about it. So good on him for that. I don't want to hate on him. I just don't like his movies for the most part. I mean, some people love his stuff. I don't. And the same issues that are present in pretty much every one of his movies are magnified in this one. And it's just like, subjectively, I don't like his style and his movies for the most part. Objectively speaking, this is a horribly, horribly made movie. It's just cut up. It's poorly written. He writes his own stuff. This is just poorly written. Just shit happens out of nowhere for no reason. It's just bad. It's just really, really bad.
Every time David Ayer, we talk about a David Ayer's movie that comes up where it's like, maybe just stick to directing, because you do some things that have some visual flair, mm-hmm. but gosh, yeah, you're terrible at writing.
There were moments like that, and I do want to add that Shia LaBeouf was very good. He was like 1,000% committed to the role, like he always is. He pulled it off tremendously, but the role is not as big or prominent as the marketing leads you to believe, and it's kind of disappointing. And it's one of those characters where he is able to just have this scary, scary, intimidating presence, and that you have this almost, he's a legend where people know him and they're terrified of him, and they talk about how terrible he is, and like he's the devil.
This is the one where he's all tatted up and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, he plays Creeper.
He just does nothing. It's like all this, like, oh, he's the shit and he's the devil and people are terrified. And then, like, we get to, it's all just, we're told that, we are never shown that. And it's very disappointing.
So one of the things I wanted to bring up, Shane, you brought it up in our text, was the movie Harsh Times. Harsh Times in our group, we haven't really brought it up in a long time, is probably one of the worst movies we've ever seen. Aaron Drug, a couple of us to go see it one time.
And you guys didn't put up much of a fight. I mean, Christian Bale is one of the best actors of our time, and it's like, okay, he's coming out with this new movie. Let's see what it is.
Yeah, and we think it's one of the worst movies of all time. And Shane made the statement that The Tax Collector is worse than Harsh Times.
I'd rather watch Harsh Times. This was bad. I mean, just bad. I dare you. I dare anybody. Go watch it. I dare you.
That's a very bold statement.
Like, I'm keeping this movie in my back pocket if we ever do a hate month where we have people watch. I'm just keeping this in my back pocket. That's when I'm pulling it out.
I mean, I'm pretty sure.
I get a pick for Aaron. Here we go. tax collectors.
Has it dropped any since you posted it of 19% on Rotten Tomatoes?
It was in the teens, and on Metacritic it was like a 23 or so.
According to the app on my phone, Rotten Tomatoes, it's at a 17% from critics, 58% from audience.
Wow. Oof.
Yeah, and going back to Shia LaBeouf, Mike said he got all tatted up, and he legitimately got tattoos for this movie. His entire chest is tattooed now because he got tattoos for the role.
That's so dumb to me.
And
there's a line that I love hearing these stories about actors that really commit and get into character, but. Right. I mean, there are ways around that. Now, every single role that he takes in the future, they're going to have to do something digitally or keep it covered. I mean, that's just dumb. That I don't want to hear about, how committed. I understand he's great at that, but that I think that is unnecessary.
On top of that, he never has his shirt off in the movie. You literally...
No, come on!
Movie. I don't... Wow. I don't... Like, I get it. You're committed. You're going. I guess I don't get it. I understand why you do it, but I don't. I don't.
Well, but is that Shia's fault or is that the director's fault?
No, he's always been that way. This is the same guy that.
No, but hear me out.
Not showing it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
because
there's
probably scenes on the cutting room floor because this movie felt butchered. I don't know who cut it, if he did it, but it felt butchered where there's just. Pieces missing. I it's rough.
Interesting. God, I can't imagine that he's making money off of these films. I mean, David Ayers.
I mean, Netflix probably paid him a good amount of money.
And he's not on Netflix. Is it Netflix?
Oh, that's right. It wasn't. No.
That's Amazon Prime. That's a rental still.
Yeah, I rented it. Yeah. That's right.
I mean, somebody's got to be making some money if he keeps making. And if you look at his filmography, he's got like six things coming out within the next couple of years. He's got Bright 2, a movie called Six Years.
I wonder if he's one of these guys that doesn't consistently put out great work, but he gets people to watch it, and maybe he's just really good at managing a budget, and he can make these movies for less than other people could.
To his credit, he makes movies that have main character... minority characters. They have lots of. I mean, this is more. This is very heavily involved in the Hispanic culture and in the gang subculture.
Yeah, but then he gets bashed because they're all portraying gangsters.
Well, a lot of them are former gangsters that he gives jobs to. I mean, they're playing off a real life experience. I get it's a double edged sword, but at least he's.
Right. It seems like you can't win in Hollywood anymore.
Yeah. So I mean, like I said, he has this type of movie. A lot of people like it. I'm not one of them. And this is just objectively a horrible, horrible movie.
Interesting. Moving on. I want to ask you guys, have you ever seen Man Seeking Woman?
No.
I have no need to watch that.
No, what
I have
is
no
it?
Idea what it is.
No, it's a Fox TV show, I believe. I believe it's on Fox. But it's a show starring Jay Baruchel.
Oh God, hell no! Then
no, I didn't think you guys would like. But it's like a 20-minute comedy. But I guess it gets pretty abstract for some portions of it. And Nick, listener, coworker, friend, Nick. Used to work out in LA, and he said he did some work on it. So I told him that I would watch a few episodes because it's on Hulu now. So
okay,
I will. Man. I haven't watched them yet, but I will have an update for you guys next week.
I'm sure that there are things you can appreciate about it, but I looked it up,
and the cover photo, the poster for the show is Baruchel, however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Sitting at a table, like at a date, with what looks like one of the trolls from the Trolls movie franchise.
Yep.
With a blonde wig and a pink dress on.
See? Like, I heard it's pretty freaking wild. And it has Eric Andre in it, which, if you know anything about that dude, it's just bizarre as hell. Or he's bizarre as hell. The Eric Andre show is just wild. So I just figure I might as well give it a watch. I'll have an update for you guys next week.
Remind
me if I forget.
I mean, you'll have to be the one to review it because that's a hard pass for me.
I don't mind Jay Baruchel. I don't know how you say his last name. I don't mind JB.
Yep.
I mean, of the people in the podcast, the three with you are the three that won't watch it.
Yeah.
Brent
might, if you recommended it to Brent, he might be one. He's into comedy shows like that.
But, McNeil might watch it. And you, obviously. Yeah. So.
That's funny, though. One other question before we actually get into the review of The Outpost today. One question that I wanted to ask, and I thought of this a few days ago. Do you think DVDs and Blu-rays, like physical copies of media, because we've been streaming all summer long. This is where this idea came from. This question came from. Do you think those will ever go away?
I don't know. There are still collectors, and I'm one of them.
Yes. Right, and I'm asking three people with very extensive.
There's a lot of people that are adamant about physical media. Like there's even like the hashtag physical media forever. You know, like people.
Yeah.
I think as because long as the base is big enough for the companies to make money.
And my reasoning is, you know, a lot of the better movies that come out throughout the year aren't going to be free to stream. You're going to have to rent them for, you know, $7 at a time. And if if I want to watch a movie, I watch it when it comes out. And if I want to watch it 2, 3, whatever, however long after that, then I've already paid for the price of having it physically. And I can watch it whenever the heck I want if I have a copy.
Sure.
And in most cases, if I didn't go to the theater to see it, I can buy a DVD or a Blu-ray cheaper. Yeah.
Cheaper than the cost of tickets and concessions.
Yep. For me and my wife. So for me, I enjoy having the Blu-ray or DVD, whatever, sci-fi, whatever I want to buy.
But here's the question is you could, instead of renting it, you can buy a digital copy and just
bring it on demand. And I know people that do that. I'm just not good enough with technology to be comfortable with that.
That shows you're an old
and
ass
I
man.
Just, I, it's it, and it's weird. It's similar to the bit debate of Nook or physical book. I'll take a physical book every day. Yep. And I'm the same way. I just something about the physical copy on a case of physical copies it appeals to me more than just a digital library. It's nothing that I would be fine. I've switched over to all digital and video games. I don't remember the last time I bought a physical copy. So I have nothing against having digital copies of something. I think it's just the collection aspect that having that physical opening up that case, taking out the disc. It's just something about it that I will never go away from that.
For yeah, sure. As long as they're available. The thing. I love when it's a night to watch a movie. I love standing in front of my wall of movies and browsing rather than sitting and thumbing through little pictures. And I just like standing there and picking a movie.
I think there are two things that are keeping it alive. And it's that is one of them where people have a dedicated area for all their movies, their collection.
It's the aesthetic of the collection in your home.
And then I think the second thing could come in play is the extras. Like the only reason why I would buy a Blu-ray nowadays is if I wanted to see the behind the scenes or the director or the actor commentary or the like anything of these
extras. But even then though, if you do it digitally, most of those, once the release is available, most of those are online somewhere.
See, I didn't know that because I don't
you can go to YouTube or somewhere to find it.
Well, yeah, I mean, but I think
or even you get just a Google it and you can go to the specific website for the movie and they'll have behind the scenes stuff and And a lot of the times they put that type of stuff in the marketing campaign with, you know, look at the Mission Impossible movies. That's their shtick.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So I think as soon as the studios and the marketing companies stop giving a crap about the behind the scenes and the extra stuff that you get is when we will see a decrease in the amount of physical copies, you know?
Well, and I'm sure it's been hurt by the COVID situation. I'm sure people aren't rushing out to go buy physical copies and people are doing what we're doing now and streaming.
I'm sure DVDs haven't been hurting because of it.
Yeah. If only I think Redbox has been hurt. I don't want to go and touch a thing. No. Like, but I would rather buy
it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I would rather just buy one, have it shipped to my house instead of having to rent one that people...
I did that with Game of Thrones. Yeah. I bought the Blu-ray set on Amazon and just had it delivered.
Yeah. So I find it interesting.
One thing I wanted to bring up before we switch over to the actual movie. I read an article yesterday that said it was about AMC movie theaters. We had we've brought them up multiple times. They had said that they had lost more than $100 million in this year alone, $100 million since the beginning of the year. Their CEO has stated that any changes in cleaning, sanitization, splitting seats up will be pushed on to the consumer. And he said what that means is whether it be higher food prices, higher ticket prices.
We're going to pay them to clean our seats?
Yeah.
People aren't going to go. See, you're killing yourself.
So it sounds like AMC, I've heard from what's the Alamo. The Alamo has put in their cleaning systems. Yeah. If you look on their app, they've showed everything they're doing.
Right.
Haven't raised their prices. I think if AMC goes through with this, they're going to end up going down the hole faster than...
Yeah. Oh, without it, this is a complete lesson in bring value to your customers, and your customers will bring you value.
Yeah.
People, especially in nowadays in the time of a crisis, are going to look for companies that align with their values and pour money into them. I would go to Menards before to Lowe's.
It's not only that. It's that there's such easy access to an alternative that if you do that, people aren't going to pay for it.
Well, that's also the point, is like, it's like value-based marketing though. Like you show like you do the right thing for the customer and the customer will take care of you.
Yep.
If you don't give a shit about the customer.
Yeah. And if you're making me pay you to do the right thing, then
right.
No.
It's
hell no.
I mean, just think about this. What was the last time you went to a movie theater? Was probably The Lodge, right?
No, I went to the Tremors.
Okay. So, I mean, we spent tickets on The Lodge.
Yeah.
$11 a piece. So for most of us, a couple, that's $22 in just tickets alone, plus concessions. I mean, that's another $30-$40 right there.
Dude, I think there was a total of six or seven of us. So that's, let's just say $75 plus all of us got a drink. That's $5 in popcorn. That's another five. Like that's $150.
That's going to a restaurant and wanting to sit down and saying, yeah, there's still people's shit all over the table. And they're like, I'll clean it for $5. What? Okay, I'll go somewhere else. What are you doing?
I mean,
that's your job. You want me to be here.
Yeah. I can't tell you the last time I had been to an AMC theater, mostly because the one by my house, that's literally right down the street, I can't pick seats where I go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, if you're not doing that by now, you're done.
This is the same. I feel like this is the same argument with like, oh, millennials in that generation is killing big box stores. It's like, no, we found a better way to shop.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's not our fault that you guys can't keep up. And if
you don't adjust,
right,
that's on you.
Right.
I read an article and the best analogy they gave is like a. And they say it when I watch baseball games all the time. You have to adjust every day, every week, every year. That's like a batter going up and striking out and consistently doing the same exact thing and then complaining because you don't get results.
Yeah. I feel like the markets are moving 10 times faster since like the invention of and the creation of the wide use of mobile phones and like the internet and apps and everything, that companies are having a hard time keeping up. And then when they can't keep up, they throw fits and then it only shoots themselves in the foot.
Yeah.
It's wild. But no, that is a great, I'm glad you brought that up. That was great. Let's get in. This is going to be a long episode. But let's get into The Outpost. From 2020, it's a rated R film, 2 hours and 3 minutes long. It's a drama history war film. A small team of U.S. soldiers battle against hundreds of Taliban fighters in Afghanistan. Directed by Rod Lurie, written by Paul Tamizi and Eric Johnson. Adapted by the book by Jake Tapper, The Outpost, An Untold Story of American Valor. Starring Scott Eastwood, Caleb Landry Jones, Orlando Bloom, Jack Kesey, Corey Hardrick. You can stop me whenever. Milo Gibson.
Yeah, there you go. That's probably the other relative. Well, Gibson's a big name.
There's also a guy named Alexander Arnold. Do you think he's related to Arnold?
Yes, Schwarzenegger.
Yep.
Totally, 100%.
The Outpost on Rotten Tomatoes gets a 92% certified fresh from critics, giving it a score of 7.8 out of 10, and an audience score of 83%, giving it a score of 4.08 out of 5. Critics' consensus: told with gripping realism, The Outpost is a thrilling technical feat and a worthy tribute to military heroes. So, Steve, you picked it, and why did you pick it?
This is, well, war movies are pretty high up on, I'd say, at the top of my list. You got space movies. I'm a sucker for space movies, and then war movies. So probably my highest is Saving Private Ryan. So there you go. That's kind of why I picked this. And it's a 2020 movie. First thoughts. It's kind of a slow build going into this, but then once it gets into, I guess, the gist of the fight, it's like nonstop action for a good 45 minutes into this movie.
Yeah, and very well done considering the budget.
I
haven't been able to find the number, but it's definitely lower budget. It has an intriguing cast with Clint Eastwood's kid, Mel Gibson's kid.
Who, by the way, so Mike, remember when you said your girlfriend did not know who Clint Eastwood was?
Yeah.
In this movie, and let me start by saying Scott Eastwood looks like Clint Eastwood's clone.
Oh yeah,
it looks exactly like him. Sounds yep. Exactly like young Clint Eastwood.
Even vocal
yes,
like rhythm, vocal yes. Rhythm. There were a couple lines he said in this movie. It's like, damn, that's
the way he like clicks his teeth and squints. I'm like, okay, there's Clint. But anyway, dude, so
actually, we're 25. I'm going through his pictures, and there's a picture of him in an army helmet, like squinting. And I was like, damn, that does look like
Clint Eastwood.
It's crazy.
Spitting image. So we're 20 minutes in, and we're watching this movie. And I said, damn, he's like, it's like watching Clint Eastwood. And my wife's like, well, which one, Scott Eastwood? The one that looks and sounds just like him.
It's the bald-headed weird guy that looks nothing like Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, so, I mean, your girlfriend didn't know who Clint Eastwood was, but at least she's got company, kind of. But
Milo Gibson shows up and doesn't look much like his dad. He has similar eyes, but sounds the same thing. He sounds very similar to Mel Gibson. He doesn't look like him, not even close, but
I mean, I could see.
You can definitely see the real thing, but it's not like the clone
spitting image.
Like, and even when he talks, like it's like, damn, this dude sounds like Mel Gibson. But so that was cool. But aside from that, everybody was damn good in this movie.
Yeah, that's my first thoughts are. I was not looking forward to this. I mean, to be honest, war movies are not high up on my list of favorite types of movies. I just, sometimes they get a little too cheerleadery for, I mean, like hoorah like America type of thing.
That's like you said last night.
And it just doesn't really, it's not really my thing. So, but this surprised me. It wasn't like this extremely pro-America war movie. It honestly just told the story, and I think being based on a book helped. There were some issues with the dialogue, and maybe that's how, I mean, like the frat boy idiot, every other word's an F word. I mean, it was just it was hard to get through the first parts of it, but there were very good characters. The acting almost across the board was pretty dang great.
Let me
Caleb Landry though. Drones really knocked me back on it. Like, man, he was good. Even Orlando Bloom was pretty awesome in this
movie. What do you think of his accent, though?
I thought it was fine. I don't know where the guy is from that he played. Keating.
South, hopefully. I don't know. He sounded like a bad impression of Foghorn Leghorn to me.
No, it says right here he's from Portland, Maine, and I would have guessed
that Northeast. Was not a northern accent.
Yes, it totally was. Yes.
No.
Yeah, totally. I would have guessed Northeast.
I disagree with that. I didn't think his accent was very... It was spotty, first of all. It kind of like... He would say certain things one way, and then that would slip in other ways. It wasn't like Kevin Costner in Robin Hood or anything like that, but it was a little spotty. And I honestly thought he was going for Foghorn Leghorn. I would never have guessed.
Okay, so I don't know if he was born... He was born in... Not in Portland, Maine, but he was born in the Northeast. Went to school.
Either way,
anyways.
I would not have guessed that. And his accent kind of threw me off a bit. It wasn't enough to ruin it, but he threw me off a little bit. After saying that, I did like his character and his portrayal. The accent was a little iffy, but he did play a good character, and he
did much more than
it was written for, I could say.
Well, and his character is what made me, like I said, I was not anticipating liking this movie, but his character made me almost immediately rethink the type of movie it was going to be, because this is a guy stuck in the middle of a war. Instead of painting it as Americans are the good guys,
mm-hmm.
and all others are the bad guys, it's like he's there trying to understand the people and foster some sort of peaceful situation between the two sides, and the way he spoke to and to his own people, and his expectations of his own people. And even when he gives his speech before they go into the town to have their little talk, it wasn't like a big giant pep talk. Oh, we're going to kick some ass. And it was like, you know what? Our intention here is to create peace. Should anything go wrong, then you guys do your jobs.
Yeah.
And so that's why it surprised me how much I actually liked it. And they were real people. They weren't these idiotic army caricatures. There was no, remember the whole Captain America guy from,
yeah.
What the heck was that movie? Hacksaw Ridge. Yeah, there was nothing like that where, you know, you're picking up dead bodies as shields and running with your M60 one-handed. And I mean, there was none of that. It was pretty grounded, and they're, like I said, they were truly believable characters.
Probably the biggest example of that, like, gung-ho character was Scott Eastwood's character. But mm-hmm. even so, that was a more grounded, realistic. He was just he had been there. He knew what he was doing. He was just damn good at his job, and he knew it. It was not like let's kill them all. It was just like, let me do my job. I can do this. And they were holding him back type of deal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and
I didn't mind
it. And it wasn't like he was all, you know, it just was different. It was more subdued. He was calm. He was quiet. He just was good at what he did.
And so, I think a lot of that is for two reasons. It was a dedicated effort by everyone involved to tell the story of these humans, not the story of this big victory of, you know, for America. It's just the story of these humans and their brotherhood. And two, I think it also came down to budget, because of budget, it had to be a more grounded, intimate telling of the story. They couldn't make it this huge blockbuster, and not that this and so in real life, this was a 2-day long battle, you know, and so they couldn't do that. They chopped it up. They made it basically an hour. but it's fine, because that allowed it to be more intimate and more about the characters. And like Steve said, for that hour or so, it doesn't stop. It just does not let up. And it, it's actually, it's very incredible what they accomplished.
Yeah, another reason why I picked this is the story of this. Like, it starts off black screen showing you or telling you that the United States has built these outposts in Afghanistan, and they put this one in the middle of a valley surrounded by mountain. Like, it's like the most nuts thing you've ever heard. Like, yeah. Why the hell would you put
the
this?
Most obviously indefensible position you could possibly put an outpost, surrounded by on all sides by high ground.
Yeah.
Every attack comes from above. It's like, so, and they do. They constantly mention how absurd it is and how ridiculous it is, and it just. And it's, and it's a situation that, and that's the thing. It does talk about that, where it's like, what an obvious mistake.
Yeah.
And these people paid for it with their lives.
And I want to talk about, we're going to get, from this point on, I'm going to get into spoilers, because I think there's things that need to be talked about. So before we do that, would you all recommend that people go watch this? Let's phrase it differently. Was it worth the, what, $5-6 to rent it? Because I think it was well worth that, and I would recommend people watch it.
Yeah, I agree. Like I said, I was not happy about having to rent this because of what I thought the movie would be. But yes, I am not only would I will recommend this to, I know there are a few people at work that I know would love it. So I'm going to tell them, hey, it's worth the rental.
So for me, I was excited to watch this movie, but I kind of had low expectations based off, I mean, Mike said The Outpost. Oh, is it the old one? I mean, you're starting low, but I think this movie has to be sitting in my top five for the year. I enjoyed this movie a lot, and yes, I would recommend it to anybody.
Okay, so now go rent it, go watch it. Now we're going to get into spoilers. Part of what made this successful for me, and they, I don't want to say it was a gimmick, but they used the deaths of certain characters to make you know and to portray how basically just at any moment people could go. Because the quick out of nowhere death of Orlando Bloom, and then here comes Milo Gibson, and he's a bigger dude, and he's intimidating. He seems like a good leader. And then just in the snap of a finger, he's gone.
Yeah,
and it's just moments like that that they used.
That
and
character,
it's bigger names and bigger personalities that are just gone in the blink of an eye. And they use that to say, look, nobody is safe. At any moment, this place is just a death trap.
I actually, that one death on the bridge, I knew was coming. So it wasn't because I had read an article. Apparently, he's from Nebraska or lived in Nebraska.
Yeah, they mentioned
there was, there was a line talking about Nebraska football, and so there was an article about him, and then mentioning this movie in one of the local websites or newspapers or whatever. So that was pretty interesting to see a guy from our hometown.
I mean, it's pretty obvious on that bridge scene that something's gonna happen, because it's slow playing, and then it just like it pans way back on this bridge, and you're like, well, something's gonna happen.
But they would use that, and they do similar camera techniques where they'd linger on something, so you're kind of on edge, like, well, okay, something bad's happening, and then the situation would be diffused, or nothing would happen, and they'd move on. And so they used those deaths kind of as the basis for setting that tone and putting us, the viewers, on edge. I think it worked pretty damn well.
Yep.
And the fact that the battles would just start out of nowhere. A shot would happen. There's a little quick battle, and then it was done.
Yeah, the guy's literally sitting there taking a shower outside.
Yeah.
He's firing his gun butt naked.
Yeah. I mean, that was cool, too, to see the just like they're in the middle of doing everyday whatever, taking a shower, doing whatever, and just – shot comes and these dudes are just drop everything. They're on target. Like it,
even when the big one starts, the big battle, Scott Eastwood and some of the other guys, they're sleeping and they wake up and they don't panic. They're not like scrambling and rallying the troops. They just say, is that ingoing or outgoing? And then the other guy's like, oh, I think it's outgoing. So they just lay there. And then more shots are fired. And they're like, oh, that's incoming. So then they get up and they're at it. And so I think that's what was part of the tension that was built, because most of what we see these guys doing is more of the mundane. And then it's like, will the attacks happen now? Or are they going to attack? When will they happen? Because they're definitely going to happen.
And yeah. And I think another aspect that I appreciated that you don't see in a lot of movies of this kind is the realistic nature of their deaths. There are no movie style dramatics like I'm gonna go now, like, you know, like I'm gonna teach you how to drum, like, you know, there's nothing like it.
The States,
yeah, there's no drum and thunder deaths. Nothing like that. Like, these are just literally somebody is running and one bullet whizzes through them and they're just down, and it's like, shit. God damn, like, it comes out of nowhere. There's like, they're just running there, they're doing their job and done. And it's harsh and it's intense, but that's how it would be. You're just there and then you're not.
I brought up Saving Private Ryan earlier, and there's a very similar scene where the guy is sitting on the turret, gets shot in the helmet, and he drops down and he's like looking at, like, feeling his head, and you're just like, please don't put your, like, and Saving Private Ryan, the guy takes it off, he's like, whoa, and then he gets shot again, but this guy doesn't do that. One of the things I want to bring up that I thought was pretty cool and was able to show you, like, how many people were surrounding this village was throughout the fight scene, you can see the muzzle flares up in the trees, and it's like nonstop muzzle flares throughout the trees.
Yeah, this was filmed incredibly well.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
As far as not only the shots and some of the cinematography, I guess, but the layout and where people are, you had a good idea of basically the setup of the outpost and where they are and what's happening, and they have to take back this gate. And I think they did a really good job of letting us understand everything, even though the action is completely chaotic for a nonstop 45 minutes. I was really, really impressed with this director.
One of the issues I did have, and it wasn't really a big deal because that's kind of what they were trying to do. A couple times in the movie, they're shooting at night, but there's no light whatsoever because they're not trying to light themselves up so people can see them. But at certain points in the movie, it is hard to see certain characters while they're just talking on the screen.
And that's another, I don't know if I blame the movie or it's just it's a necessity in a movie like this. There were a lot of characters and it was hard to know who everybody was except for the main players. So I don't know. Is that the movie's fault, or is it just the fact that this is a, you know, there's a lot of people at this outpost? I don't know. But I mean, it didn't really detract that much. It was just kind of like they yell a name, and I'm like, who the hell is that? Like, I need to know who you're talking about.
I mean, they spent a lot of time in the beginning of the movie just like going around to each person, and then it was bold lettering. This is this person.
And maybe that's on me for just not remembering.
Well, and there were the few that you needed to know. You know, they kept saying Scott Eastwood was, they kept calling him Roe. I think it was like Romesha or Romesha, whatever it was. Caleb Landry Jones' character was Carter, and he was prominent, and you knew that. And his friend Mace, that a big part of the emotional impact of this movie is based around that one guy. So I don't know if it was 100% necessary to know all of them. You got to know them more for who they were as a character rather than by their names.
Yeah,
like that's true. The guy Gallegos was prominent. I just didn't feel like I was lost at any point. I didn't know who the heck was who at some time, but I knew who the characters were enough that it didn't really matter.
I'd say they did a pretty good job with casting. Because at the end of the movie, they show pictures of side by side of the actor and the real person, And for the most part, most of these are like,
they're pretty good.
Oh,
pretty,
yeah. Pretty solid. Very close.
And that hits hard, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because you,
big time.
Another part of the not making it like a yay America movie and putting these guys on a pedestal. It's like you got these guys talking about failed marriages and not being able to raise their children. And they're taking all this stuff. I mean, they don't dig too deeply into it, but it's on display. One really good scene is when they're cutting from one phone call to another, to another, to another. And it's like, and then at the end, they're showing all these soldiers that died. And it's like, so-and-so, age 21.
Right, yeah, that's so-and-so, where
so-and-so, age
you.
22. Yeah, it's like, 19, oh, my God, 20, these are kids. Like,
God,
you
damn.
Forget that these are kids put in this situation that they should never have been in. And it's, I'm telling you, Caleb Landry Jones, his arc and that at the end got me. I mean, it was impactful. And to go into spoiler territories again, this is a huge spoiler. So it's a guy that he's with gets shot and is downed. And they go through so much crap just to get to this guy, to have a chance of saving him. And they can't get him out on the medical helicopter, so they have to all donate. Anybody that's A positive has to donate blood just to keep blood in this guy who's bleeding out. And they're all optimistic, and they get him on the medevac. And then after all this stuff happens, they're in the helicopter evacuating the outpost, and he overhears that guy died. And the way he took it and the way he just looked at Scott Eastwood's character, and then – It was powerful at the end when he's talking to, you know, just trying to talk through it with whatever it was, like psychologist, whatever, whoever he was assigned to talk to. And she asks, you know, was it your friend? And he just kind of laughs and says no and starts crying. He's, I mean, it's rough. And he does such a good job.
Well, that was part of what they were trying to show, is that these people, a lot of them aren't friends. Hell, some of them don't even like each other. Some of them would never have any relationship outside of this. But even so, being in a situation like this for so long together, there's that commitment to each other and that brotherhood that I might hate this guy, but damn it, like he's still one of us type of deal. And that was, yeah, they did a damn good job with that. And one more thing I wanted to hit on too is I think it was a lieutenant, the blue-eyed guy that was in the TAC room for the big battle. They did a really good job with his character, not making him that like inept leader. Like there were times where he and Scott Eastwood disagreed, but they came together to make the plan happen. Yep. And he was making things happen. Scott Eastwood was. When they disagreed, they talked it. It wasn't just like, oh, here's this inept leader making things more difficult.
That's
Scott Eastwood's the one that's going to get it done. And
lot of war movies have to have, or yes. Even cop movies, you have to have the inept leader so that your hero looks more competent around them.
Yeah, and he, that guy didn't want to do things one way. Eastwood did. Neither was wrong, and they worked it out and worked together to make it happen. That was such a breath of fresh air to see a character like that not portrayed as just a complete moron.
And he, at the end, when he breaks down crying at the end of it, and he's trying to gather himself, he's like, I know it's not the time, but it's like just this complete release of emotions because he couldn't do anything, and he kept his calm, and he stayed focused, but then at the end of it, it was like this big release, and I was surprised at how effective it was emotionally and how much you actually were invested in the characters. And it wasn't just a hey, look at these cool fight scenes type of movie.
I think, yeah. And I think it came down to low budget and the fact this wasn't a big Hollywood production. So they weren't forced to make it an action movie or a blockbuster, you know, like it was just, they made this intimate, real movie and it was better for it, I think. Anything else anybody wants to talk about?
Ready to review this or rate this?
I think so.
Okay.
Who is Steve, first or last?
I'll go last this time.
All right, Aaron, you're the one that had the most trepidation. Let's start.
Yeah. Start it off. honestly, I I even texted last night before I watched it, hoping that enough people had watched it that I wouldn't have to. So my score might reflect a little bit of how much I was surprised to like it. But I mean, Scott Eastwood surprised me by how good he was and how he played our quote hero, but he wasn't that over the top, you know, soldier, but he was more down to earth and he played it well. Caleb Landry Jones was awesome. The minor parts were good enough that you rooted for these characters. And the emotional part of it, man, you know how much I love a movie that spends time and lets you get to know these characters and you have an invested interest. So honestly, I give it probably I'd say 7.75, and it really truly surprised me how much I liked it.
Okay. I was opposite. I have been wanting to see this, and this gave me the excuse to spend the money too. I loved seeing Scott Eastwood. Honestly, he was very good. I think it's more of, I love Clint Eastwood and I don't get to see him in anything anymore. And this was, it's like, you know, it's a little like throwback, like, all right. And Eastwood in a good role in a badass movie. And, yeah, this movie just made you feel everything you were supposed to feel. It made you feel anxious during the downtime. It made you emotional at the end. And it made you feel their frustration of when their people would be trapped and they'd come together and like, okay, here's what we're going to do. They'd formulate this plan and you're like, hell yeah, let's do this. And they just get shot up and there goes the plan to shit. So they'd come up with this other plan. And every time they made a plan, it's like, one step forward, two steps back. And I was frustrated with them and it was effective at making me feel what it wanted me to feel. I'm pretty much right there with Aaron. I'm going in an 8 because I think it deserves the B+.
And I'll say the only reason mine wasn't higher is because some of the writing. It felt like, Mike, remember that film festival we attended to, the amateur shorts? And yeah. The two kids made a movie where every other word was the F-bomb.
Yep.
That's what this felt like for the first 20 minutes. It's I get it. You know, soldiers talk and they like that.
Yeah,
it was
a little rough.
They don't always use the best language, but man, it was every other word.
Damn, that's rough.
But it calmed it down was. On that it, a little it bit. It did.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was tough to get through. I if it had been written a little better for the beginning part of it, I probably would have been a little bit higher. But go ahead, Steve.
Before you go, Steve, I want to bring up one more scene that I enjoyed. It was, again, Scott Eastwood. And I enjoyed it because he's more of the, like, get things done, gung-ho, like, afraid of nothing, you know, the leader. But the scene where he talked to the guy that was clearly having a mental breakdown, where you could see his leadership style. He was very soft with him. He was willing to listen. He was willing to talk to him. That basically completed that character for me and made him feel like a human being. And you could see the great leader that he was. So I just want to add that in. Go ahead, Steve.
So you brought up Scott Eastwood. I think it's kind of like a nostalgia thing, having that Eastwood in that movie. This might be one of his bigger roles that he's had.
Yeah, definitely.
Easily his best.
And I kind of hope that he starts getting more roles because, like, he's got the face. I mean, he looks pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah, he literally looks like his dad. I mean, he could start playing movies.
Just do remakes of all of Clint's movies.
Oh, yeah. You know what's going to happen is they're going to make a biopic or a biopic.
And he's going to play
Thank
him.
You.
Of Eastwood. And he's going to play him. I mean, it has to be done. He's a Hollywood legend, and those are popular movies. But, man, spitting image.
So, one of my scenes that I loved in this movie, there's a scene where a guy's sitting there looking at a picture, and a guy comes up, and he's like, oh, man, she's a lucky girl.
Yeah.
and he's just like, you know what I'm going to do when I get home? I'm gonna let her hug me. I'm going to let her lick my body. Ooh, and I'm going to give her all the love. And then he, like, looks at the picture, and it's a picture of his dog, and you're like, oh,
that was belly rubs for days.
That was pretty good. But I think the story for this is fantastic. It's just nuts. The acting is very good. I was very surprised. And some of the shots in this movie are really well done, especially for a fight scene that's literally like 45 minutes to an hour. I'm also going to give this an 8. I really enjoyed it.
All right, so a final score then of 7.92.
Which is a B.
Let's play a quick game of... It's turned down. Hang on.
Oh, gosh.
Every time.
Let's play
5 minutes of prep work is all we ask before we start, Mike.
This same console that I use for streaming, and I forget, like,
yeah,
when it's streaming, it has to be settings A, and when it's this, it has to be straight.
People would be confused if our shows were flawless. Let's be honest.
or when you're streaming, just hit the pop quiz asshole button.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's so funny. All right, let's play a quick game.
Pop quiz asshole.
This or Star Trek. And that's the 2012-13, whenever.
This.
I might go that just because it's more fun. It's more rewatchable.
A story or a movie that we talked about on the show already today. The Babadook.
This.
Hacksaw Ridge.
This.
Honestly, I prefer Hacksaw. I don't know. Maybe it's the bigger battles. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. What about the time in Hacksaw when he used that dude as a meat shield?
Yeah, I mean, we already talked about
it. You gotta do what you gotta do. It actually happened. Read a book.
Green Book.
Haven't seen it.
This.
Taxi Driver.
Oh. That. Well, yeah. That's a performance in an okay movie. I'd probably rewatch this more often.
Yeah,
I could watch old De Niro performance 100 times. That's true. In a row.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Bridge of Spies.
Haven't seen.
That.
Interesting. The Usual Suspects.
This. All day.
Mad Max Fury Road.
Fury Road.
Yep, for sure.
In Bruges.
In Bruges.
Easily.
Cold Mountain.
Cold Mountain, yes. Stop this.
Cold Mountain.
Baby Driver.
Oh, this.
I haven't seen it still.
I'd still say this.
You should watch it.
This for sure.
Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
This.
That.
This.
Heat.
This.
Heat.
Oh, Heat.
This due to time.
Well, maybe so,
hours to watch Heat again.
I think that's Heat's fair. A better movie, but it's much longer.
Heat is a damn masterpiece.
Terminator 2.
Easy.
Mm-hmm. T2.
Yeah, probably. I think I might have rated it lower, but probably that.
John Wick.
John Wick.
I think John Wick has a...
Especially the first one. I think the first one, honestly, is the best John Wick.
Probably, yeah. That's a tough one.
The third one yet.
You should.
It's very good, and it's very good as an action movie. But I think the first John Wick is the most character centric and grounded, and it's the best for it.
Yeah. Nightcrawler.
This. Ooh. That.
Minority Report.
This.
Probably.
Last one. Starship Troopers.
This.
Oh, man. That. I would watch more times.
Nostalgia is Starship, but this is a better movie.
Nostalgia's it is. Undoubtedly, this is a better movie.
Yeah. All right. So that's 7.92 for The Outpost, the 2020 version, obviously. Check us out online at moviereviewcrew.com. Request movies right on our homepage. If you think that there's a movie streaming either to rent or free on some of those services, let us know, and we will get to them. Yes, Shane.
We did get a request for a streaming movie.
Yes.
Just either last night or this morning. I don't remember which. To watch and review, and now I'm blanking on the name. It's on Hulu, and it has the Brooklyn Nine-Nine guy.
Palm Springs.
Yes, that's the movie.
Steve talked about that a couple episodes ago.
We got a request to watch and review that one. So,
also, he has a name.
Andy, the
Brooklyn Nine-Nine guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
He nailed it.
Jacob Peralta. Jesus.
Jacob Peralta, fair.
All right. Well, cool. That is whose pick is it next week?
Shane's.
I think it's
Shane's.
Mine.
All right. Yep. So you're picking.
Early indications are I'm going to pick Runaway Train because I, if I'm not mistaken, that's available on Amazon Prime and I was requested a bit back. So
you're talking about the song.
Yep. We're going to review the song.
Runaway Train.
Yep. Actually, we're all just going to sing it too.
All right. That wraps up today's show. Join us next week for another movie that we review. It'll be streaming. Anything else, guys?
That's it.
All right. Someone on the show.
Tell your friends.
Let's go. But inconspicuously. Through the window.
Lady, I'm afraid I'm going to have to ask you to leave the store.
Okay, that's it. Screw you guys. I'm going home.
Game over, man. Game over. What are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Good night. And good luck.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Movie Review Crew. Remember to like us and find us on any of your favorite social media platforms, as well as go to our website, moviereviewcrew.com.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.